Hello and welcome. I am your host, Kirsty, and this is Leadership Odysseys. We're embarking on a mission to bridge the gap between aspiration and reality, offering a raw and unfiltered exploration of the behind-the-scenes challenges that shape true leadership. Join us as we share stories of resilience, turning points, and authentic human experiences that remind us greatness is a product of the entire odyssey, not just the destination. Today we have the pleasure of welcoming a true leader in the world of entrepreneurship and talent recruitment, none other than Steve Grace. Steve's journey is nothing short of remarkable, marked by a series of unplanned beginnings and unexpected turns that ultimately led him to the forefront of the startup ecosystem. From his humble roots chasing marine biology to navigating the bustling streets of London's recruitment scene, Steve's odyssey is a testament to resilience, adaptability, and the relentless pursuit of one's passion. As the CEO and founder of The Nudge Group, Steve has revolutionised the way startups and scale-ups find talent, offering bespoke solutions tailored to the unique needs of fast-growing companies. Driven by a passion for storytelling and a desire to showcase the journeys of founders and innovators, Steve launched Give It a Nudge, a popular podcast that shines a spotlight on the startup ecosystem. Through insightful interviews and candid conversations, Steve provides a platform for emerging leaders to share their experience and insights with a global audience. In addition to his work with The Nudge Group and Give It a Nudge, Steve is the CEO of Balance the Grind, the go-to publication to help you live better, featuring content focused on celebrity daily routines and habits and work-life balance. Throughout his journey, Steve has encountered triumphs and setbacks, challenges and opportunities, all of which have shaped him into the visionary leader that he is today. With a keen eye for talent, a knack for identifying emerging trends, and a relentless pursuit of excellence, Steve Grace continues to push the boundaries of what is possible in the world of recruitment and entrepreneurship. His journey serves as an inspiration to aspiring entrepreneurs and business leaders worldwide, demonstrating the transformative power of passion, perseverance, and purpose-driven innovation. Welcome, Steve, to Leadership Odysseys.
Wow. I don't even know what to say. I don't think I need to say anything. If we're done, we'll just sign it off at that, right? Tell me, where'd you get the marine biology thing from? I didn't think anybody still knew that.
Oh, Google is a fabulous tool.
Is that
still
on Google?
It is on Google. When you dive in and you start doing your research, you can find some wonderful things about people.
Really? I can't. That was, gosh, a lifetime ago. Let's not talk about that.
Oh, well, no. It's a point of reference within your journey. But on that note, Steve, let's really dive right into your journey. And I want to know, so where did it all begin? Who is Steve?
Goodness. Well, firstly, thank you so much for having me on the show. As I mentioned to you just before we started recording, I am a fan. I think my journey began watching my father, who was a dentist and a Harley Street dentist in London, have or discover an injury in his neck, which prevented him from doing his job. And he had kids at private school, i.e. me and my siblings, and we had a house and a mortgage to pay off, and he didn't know what to do. And he went off and he started a whole array of different companies and went from being the humble dentist who'd always wanted to be a dentist, and my grandfathers had been dentists forever, to suddenly being an entrepreneur. And I think watching that, as I was probably about 12, 13 when that happened, that's probably where it began. Yeah, it's interesting to see that happen. I don't think you realize how much impact, and I'm quite conscious of this now because my son's actually about the same age, how much impact you have as a parent on your child, or how much impact things have to you on a child when you're living your life.
Oh, I couldn't agree anymore. And I think they do say, there's been a few podcasts I've listened to over the last year where they say around that 10 as well is a really pivotal time in your life.
Is it 10? Oh, no, they're 13 and 15. I missed it. I wonder what we were doing at 10.
No, but around that transition time of, like, you know, you're starting to become this, you know, on your way to becoming a teenager and everything happening around you where you really are absorbing all of that dynamics. And so if that definitely at a time of retrospect, I suppose, of looking back and
yeah, it is retrospect, 100%. Yeah, I mean, gosh, my children were going through COVID. That's not great. But yeah, it's funny. I mean, I don't think I realized, probably until I started doing podcasts, what sort of happens to you, because you don't ever take the time to reflect. You just sort of keep going, right? You just keep powering on. I think podcasts are great for that. If anyone hasn't been on a podcast, get on a podcast. It's good self-reflection. It's a bit like therapy.
It is a bit like therapy. And I think the best part of podcasts is not coming in too scripted. I like to start off with a bit of a script because, you know, it really is just going the overview, I suppose. Yep. But very much being able to, you know, ask questions and be like, oh, actually, yes, this did, you know, happen in my life, and looking back, and it is very much like therapy when you go through it.
Like marine biology, right?
Oh, 100%. We need to hear about this marine biology. So you finished school and you dived into it?
I'm not sure it reflects me in the best light. Maybe it had something to do with how I ended up in Australia. I don't know. Look, the simple reason I was going to go and do marine biology at university was because there was a girl I liked who was going to do marine biology. That was literally the only reason. And then I didn't end up going. So I ended up not going to uni after all that in the end, which, you know, may or may not have been a good thing, who's to know. But I ended up playing tennis as a job, which I was terrible at for a fair few years until I realised how terrible I was at it. But yeah, but that was my reason for going to marine biology. It's interesting you picked that up,
funny.
Not the tennis, right?
That is really funny. No, very interesting. There must be something in there that it really did stand out. But no, hilarious that you made a decision in your life based off chasing a potential future
17
partner.
Years old.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And how life really had a very different direction for you, really.
But yeah, very. Although I did end up here. You know, I ended up here in Australia, and I think I came to Australia having never been to Australia, really having watched videos of the Great Barrier Reef. That's pretty much my impression of Australia before I got here. So I don't know. Maybe in some way it had something to do with it.
Maybe. So what was that journey like for you? You've arrived in Australia and, you know, what was that first step?
So I think I'd been in recruitment in London for 3 or 4 years. Like I said, accidentally fell into it like everybody else. Went in there to get a job and they said, do you want to work here? You end up working there. London recruitment scene in the 90s was brutal. It was, you got fired very easily. There was no email, fax machines, you know, real old school stuff that people probably listening to this don't understand. But I got to a point where the lifestyle was probably unhealthier than I was willing to sustain. And I decided it was time to look for a job, and Australia seemed like the obvious place, you know, warm, which is something I love. I'm a very solar-powered human being. I like the sun a lot and speaks the English language and, you know, a very easy transition. So applied for some jobs and came over here. It was quite exciting. I mean, back then it was very easy to get a visa. They would pick you up in a limo and they would put you up in this beautiful apartment that looked over the Opera House, things that we'd never dream of now. So it was kind of the heady days. So I loved it. I mean, it was 1999. Mm-hmm. So we were coming into year 2000. I did technology recruitment, and at that time everyone was worried about the year 2000. So there was so much work and so few recruiters, the exact opposite of what London was. I just thought I was in heaven.
That really was setting the stage then for, I mean, tech, look at you now in everything that you do. Look at where you are in the world. But, yeah, what a great beginning, though. As much as, yes, I have heard many a stories about the early days of recruitment and, you know, really driving those key targets that needed to be met. But I dare say, did it set the foundations for you to give you, is it part of your why, of why you wanted to reshape that industry?
I think, oh, that's a good question. I think my foundations in terms of my work ethic came once I realized I couldn't play tennis, and I went off and I sold kitchen knives door to door, and I sold fake perfumes, not illegal ones, just fake ones. They may have been portrayed in a slightly more positive light than perhaps they were in business parks to shops. And I think that's just a horrible job, right? It's a brutal job. Doesn't seem horrible at the time. When you look back on it, it's just grim. But I think it teaches you a lot of perseverance and resilience, because 90% of people tell you to go away. But I think coming here was, I don't know, it felt like a land of opportunity. And I think for me, the whole wanting to change the startup thing came a lot later, probably in my second business, I think, was when that sort of hit me as something that needed to happen. And it was at a time when I'd literally sold my second recruitment business, and I was adamant I didn't want to do another recruitment business. I was adamant. That was, no, definitely not. And I'm sitting around, and you have a period after you've exited a business where you can't work in the industry, and I'm sitting around trying to work out what to do, and I've got all these. And then I thought, you know what? I love the startup scene, and the startup scene was beginning to pick up, and we'd done some recruitment in my previous business for Safety Culture when they were like 10 people. It was a long time ago. And we'd done a horrific job, in my opinion. And it wasn't because we were bad recruiters, it was because we didn't understand startups. We didn't understand employee share option plans. We didn't understand funding cycles. We didn't understand the different types of individuals you need at different stages. We didn't understand anything. And we were sending the same candidates to Westpac and Combank as we were sending startups, which was just wrong. I think when you sit around, and unfortunately for me, when I exited that business, it was winter. So if it had been summer, I might have been less time to think because I'd have been out on the beach or whatever, but it was cold.
At Bondi all day.
Yeah, but it was cold and wet and I was sitting at home going, what am I going to do? So I had a lot of time to think, and I think that's when that sort of problem came to me and I started to think, well, you know, everyone always says you've got to solve a problem. This seems to be a problem. Let's try and solve it.
Absolutely, and a big problem that you are solving out there indeed. I am going to ask on that, you did mention, you know, in those initial businesses that you did start, that difference in candidates between going to that big, large corporate bank, especially the top four, versus that startup. It actually would be great to share with our audience, what is the difference for someone really thinking about the beginning stage of their career where, because are you a generalist or a specialist, I think is a key part in that component. But what actually would be some great advice to share about how to find the right direction?
Yeah, for someone who kind of stumbled on their right direction, I'm not sure I should be giving advice. But, I mean, I there was a period where I gave a little course on helping people who wanted to leave corporates go into startups. And I think what I learned by giving that course is the misconceptions of what startups are and the lack of understanding of the complexity within the startup space. So I think when you think about startups and scale-ups, you know, they're all in the same sort of boat, you've really got to understand that a startup goes through, it's like a child. It goes through a lot of phases of development in a very short period of time, whereas a large corporate will continue to develop and evolve, but much, much slower, a bit like a middle-aged person. So, you know, you can really think of it like that. You know, when you're joining an early-stage startup, you really are joining an infant, a baby, you know, which is very different to a toddler, which is very different to, you know, a tween, which is very different to a teenager and so forth. And I think we can talk about the differences of kind of personalities, but what you need to understand is how your personality fits in and where you're actually going to be most effective. And I've had quite a lot of conversations with people over the years who've wanted to join a startup, God knows what the reason, usually because they think it's cool. And we've talked and worked out what they're good at, and then we've told them, no, they can't, and this is why. They don't like that. People don't like being told that. And then when you explain it to them, they begin to understand. So I think it's really about your traits. You know, are you good with ambiguity? Do you like to not necessarily know how something's done? Are you someone who's quite inquisitive, who likes to think of things or challenge things, or you like to have a way of doing things? Do you like to do everything, or do you just like to do your part? There's so many different traits, and you can obviously see where that goes. You know, at the beginning, you need to be able to do everything and really not care what the heck's going on or what the day's going to throw at you, whereas later on, you have to be very specific in your task and work very collaboratively with others to achieve a sort of common goal. So you really need to sort of think, okay, where does my personality sit? You don't have to have work experience to work that out. It's quite easy to work out how your personality works.
Yeah, some great advice there to be able to share, because I think that is, the world has changed so much in the last 5 years, and there's just so many different options when you are looking at your career path, and it's never just one straight line. It's gonna come with a mixture of not only highs and lows, but the ability to take different turns and to actually change that, just like your leap into becoming an entrepreneur.
100%. And it's interesting to say 5 years. Nudge been going nearly 5 years, and the change in the startup scene just in that time has blown my mind. Like, it's been astronomical and it's still changing. You know, obviously AI is coming, that's going to completely rework it again. There's this constant, COVID had a big impact on the startup scene, which I don't think people necessarily realize. It's just changed so quickly, and I think it will continue to, very much like a child, because it is in Australia still a relatively new ecosystem compared to perhaps the UK or US.
So how do you stay up to date with all of that as a founder so that you can guide your team?
It's a good question. I get a lot of newsletters. But I think honestly, I meet probably 20 new founders every month, which is a lot. But that's the only way you can. It really is. And we work with venture capital companies. We work with private equity companies. We work with accelerators. We work with co-working spaces. You have to kind of be in that. We go to a lot of events. I speak at a lot of events. I talk to people after the events. I listen to events. It's a commitment to be in this ecosystem. I think you can go into a bank or an insurance company or even the sort of other sort of more fitness companies or other large corporates, and you can keep on top of that industry relatively simply. But in this ecosystem, you need to be doing everything all the time. It's a lot of commitment. It's definitely not a 9-to-5 thing.
What's your passion behind it? What problems are you solving in the world? When you came to, you've had these couple of startups, you've sold them, you've had a little bit of time in between each one, and then you've launched the Nudge Group. What was your why behind that?
I think my why was, so the previous companies, so the first company was focused on digital technology, the second one was focused on corporates and government. I think my why was that those companies and those organizations were able to afford recruitment, but they were probably the people that needed it the least. The people that needed recruitment the worst were founders. Founders couldn't afford recruitment. So that was really, it was like, here we've got the one part of the whole business community who needs our services the most, and they can't afford to use it. And you're going, okay, well, what do? Do we just charge a lot less? We can't do that because it's actually much harder to recruit for them. So we have to work out how to do that. And then it sort of evolved from there. And I've called it this before, it's sort of like the karma circle, in that what we worked out was, if we can help founders with everything in terms of growing their businesses, their business will grow. If their business grows, they'll hire more people. If they hire more people, they'll use us. So we went out to market with the media channels, which you touched on earlier. We also help people get funding. We also help people launch into new countries. We do a whole bunch of stuff that we charge nothing for. And that usually results in them succeeding, which results in them hiring people, which is when they come back to us. And, you know, I was lucky enough, because I'd had those previous exits, I had the time financially to be able to build that karma circle up. You know, obviously, if you need revenue day one, it's very difficult to do that. But we were in a lucky position where we didn't.
Sounds like you've put a lot of time, though, into thinking that through from an actual user experience as well, because it's really hard on founders. They're going a million miles an hour. They need to bring in the right people if they're going to scale. So the importance of people is everything, because it's the ability to be able to get people to come in, to go on that transformative stage. And it really is roll up your sleeves. And that's not for everyone. So finding the right talent that ready to jump into that space, it's definitely going to be solving some great problems for these founders.
It is. And I think if you look at 90% of founders, they come from a product or a technology background these days. Didn't used to, but they do now. And they typically don't know how to hire. You know, it's not like everyone's coming from an HR background. You do get those, but they're very few and far between. So you've got a demographic of person who has no idea. And there's a lot of common mistakes they make. The number one mistake everyone makes more than anything, and everyone always asks me this, is they go and hire someone from what they would consider a successful startup, like a Salesforce or an Atlassian or a Google, which is the worst person to hire in the world, because you're hiring someone from this mammoth company who doesn't know how to work in a startup. But they think because they've got this brand behind them, they'll be amazing. And they are amazing, just not in a startup. So, you know, there's a lot of mistakes like that they just don't realize. And a lot of it is really education.
Agree with you completely. I think the importance of the education around it and being able to have more information out there, just like you've got with Balance the Grind, you're sharing a lot of those stories of founders out there, and, you know, the highs and lows that they go through as well.
Yeah, Balance the Grind's cool. I like Balance the Grind. It's very different to everything else. It's got a very different look and feel. And I guess Nudge is a very, even though you're dealing with people in their careers, it's a B2B business. You know, ultimately we're paid by the other businesses. So they're our client, and then the candidates that are working in there become clients, and they're part of the process, but they're not part of the sort of transaction. So it's like you would see it as a B2B business, whereas Balance the Grind is purely business to customer. You know, it's for everybody and anybody to read. And I don't know how much you know, but it's got about 7,000 interviews there on how different people manage their lives. There's celebrities, but there's also 7,000 just everyday people, a lot of them founders. And it's progressing further now, in that this year we've tried to push it into how to help people live better, which you mentioned, whether it be financially, whether it be their careers, whether it be the environment, or whether it be their health and wellness. And it's great to be able to produce something that is actually trying to help people do better in whatever it is they're trying to do. You know, it could be literally anything. And the diversity of people I meet through that, and stories I meet through that, and also trying to run a media business, which I have no idea how to do, has probably been the most enjoyable thing for the last probably 18 months I've been doing.
How did you just dive straight in and learn the ropes along the way?
I think if you're going to put an analogy on it, I think I've dived, but I don't think I've hit the water yet. I've got a long way to go. I'm just making it up. I've tried to educate myself, but fitting that in with everything else has been difficult. So I'm going down the sort of mantra that, you know, sometimes when you've got no idea what you're doing, you come up with the best ideas. Hasn't quite clicked yet, but I'm sure any day now.
Listen, it was a bit like me starting this podcast. It's like, I'm just going to dive into it. And over time, it's going to just naturally evolve, but it's authentic and it's real. And I think that's part of, you know, Balance the Grind. You really are getting those true stories out of people. It's not too scripted. It is very much them being able to share the, you know, exactly what happens behind the scenes, how they set themselves up to be successful.
It's really interesting. We've been at a few events in the last few years, maybe even 2 years ago, we were at an event and, you know, Nudge's been around. Nudge was high profile. Nudge was the sponsor. And you're out there meeting people at this event, and I think it was a two-day event. And people go, oh, you're Balance to Grind, aren't you? And they go, oh, and everyone loved Balance to Grind. So no one knows Nudge. I was like, what's going on? Nudge drives all our revenue. We're this major sponsor. I'm here with my Nudge t-shirt on. All anyone wants to talk about is Balance to Grind. And I think that was the point when I realized, oh, wow, this is having like massive impact. We actually probably need to do a little bit more with it than we were.
Oh, future vision for it of where you can actually take it when you get some spare time.
When you get some time, yeah.
Yeah. And so you've launched Nudge. It's going exceptionally well for you. You're starting to really get that traction and build that reputation in the startup landscape that you're there as a partner as well. You're not just there for recruitment. You're very much there for that partner to go on that journey with them. Where is that evolving to? What's next for Nudge?
You know, it took a while to get that too. People didn't believe. They were like, what's the catch? And I get that. I understand why. And the only way you can sort of get that is to do that. What's next for Nudge? Look, I think we've recently done a partnership with Nudge at Tankstream, which is where we're sitting today. We're sitting in the Tankstream offices doing this podcast. And the purpose of Nudge at Tankstream was to offer earlier stage businesses access to all of our services at a discount. So you've got the Nudge Group, which is still quite happily working away, but the really, really early companies that, you know, one, two, three persons that also need our stuff, they get discounted services if they are a resident here at Tankstream, and they also get access to all of our media assets that we can put them through as well. So that was a way of really being able, by doing a joint venture with Tankstream, who are sort of, I guess, covering some of the costs of what we would normally charge, we're able to offer younger stage companies more opportunities. So we're now looking at doing that with a group in Singapore because we have an office in Singapore, and we're also looking at doing that with a group in London because we have a group in London. I think from there, I love this collaboration. So we'll look to go and talk to more venture capital companies. We already work with them, but let's see if we can get them to share some of our costs so we can offer their portfolio companies more. I think it's really just to get more reach to make people understand that we genuinely are there to help and get the people that are either funding them or giving them a space to work in to enable that. So growing that way, I think, is probably going to be the next phase. Give It a Nudge is hitting season 5, which seemed wild.
That is wild.
That's crazy. And I don't know what other services. We've got a new service we've launched called Nudge as a Service, which is, I know, a bit of a cliche. And that's designed for scale-ups. So that's where they pay a monthly amount rather than individual fees. So we're always looking, and we're doing Nudge Remote, so we're helping people go hire people in Philippines and places like that. So we're really trying to look at all the different people within the ecosystem and what they might need as a special treatment in terms of the products and create a product for them.
And then with Give It a Nudge, because that is, you know, it's a great opportunity to build that community around you as well and to build that community of like-minded founders in sharing their stories on the podcast as well. Where did that come from of wanting to launch that podcast? Was it a fill your heart? Was it, you know, there's a need out there to share some great advice?
It's become probably our most powerful tool, and it's also one of my favorite things to do. And this new season is going to be wild. We're doing a lot of on-location stuff, so it's going to be a lot more fun and interactive. But at the end of the day, when COVID initially hit, even though that was good for us in the long run because a lot more startups got funding, a lot of people had to go online, and there was, you know, everyone started doing e-commerce, so a lot of those online startup companies were very successful. That was good for us. There was a period where it wasn't good for anyone, and everyone was sitting there going, what the heck's going on? We thought we should do a podcast. But then we thought, gosh, everyone's doing podcasts. What should we do? Let's do a TV show. So I was like, okay. So we wanted to make it like, it was always designed to be like a Conan O'Brien or a David Letterman or something like that. We wanted to create more of a chat show. If you actually watch the very early episodes, you'll notice I'm sitting about 10 feet away from the other person because of the COVID rules at the time. But it was really just something to do. What we found, and this is where it's become so super useful, is that getting a founder to come on and tell their story is incredibly effective when you're recruiting. Because if you're recruiting for a company that no one's heard of and you're trying to get someone to leave a personally good job that they like, that they're not really looking at leaving, and you're asking them to join a company they've never heard that could fail because it's a startup, it's not an easy sell. So having the content that we can chop up and send them clips and let them watch before we sort of even talk to them about the job has become incredibly powerful in one, persuading people to consider moving. But two, we've kind of flipped the whole recruitment process on its head. So whereas traditionally you would go to someone with a job, then you'd tell them what company it was, and then they go and meet the manager. What we do is we send them a very small clip of the founder first – We say, we've got a job. We don't tell them anything about the job. So watch this clip. Might be 2 minutes, right? So they watch that clip. If they like the founder and they kind of get something that, I don't know, maybe just resonates with them, well, then let them watch the whole episode. If they watch the whole episode and they're still interested, and you lose a lot of people here, then and only then you talk to them about the job. What you get with that is you get people that, one, like the founder, which is key, two, like the mission, and then thirdly, like the job comes last. And so you get candidates who, when they go in to meet the founder, already know the whole story. They already know the culture and they like the mission. So they're going there for the right reasons. They tend to stay longer and they tend to have more impact. So out of doing something out of really boredom, which is what it was, we've ended up creating probably the most powerful recruitment tool we could have possibly ever had. And it's been amazing.
I love that.
Don't you love that? I'd love to say I thought of it, but it just happened.
It just happened. Well, you did, obviously, whether you thought of it or it just happened, that is phenomenal.
It just happened.
It is sharing an incredible voice, and it really is. That is changing the way recruitment is.
It's been, honestly, and I think, you know, all the different products we've created, whether it be our payment plan, they've all just happened. Out of us just sitting there going, oh, should we try that? And it's really that's kind of the whole essence of startups. It's going, oh, should we try this? Should we try that? Just trying things differently. And I'd always wanted to do recruitment differently. And we do, but we don't. You know, technically the process is similar. It's different, but it's the same still. But we have put a twist on it. And I think it works for this particular market particularly well, because everyone knows who CommBank is or NAB is or whoever they are. So I think it's been incredibly powerful. And you know, we now use the same tool for when they're raising money. It's the same thing. They can use this video to send to venture capital companies so they can actually see the whole thing and meet the founder before they meet the founder. So, you know, we're finding more and more uses for it every day.
And on the whole, you know, as you said, like these creative ideas can be well overlooked for a lot of people. How do you prioritize that with your team to really just put the computers away, put everything away, and just have open, robust discussions of all the crazy ideas that are out there to be put forward something totally different and innovate?
I think I'm very fortunate in that everyone who works for Nudge, and a lot of the people who don't work for Nudge anymore, because unfortunately we did have to let some people go during COVID and so forth, have worked with me before in my previous company. So we all know each other pretty well. Even though some of them didn't know each other because they came from different companies, there was a similar sort of feeling. And we just talk a lot of rubbish. So I think anyone who's ever done recruitment knows it's very up and down. It's highly stressful, highly rewarding. You know, it's a real roller coaster ride of emotions. So you need to just talk rubbish a lot of the day. And I think recruiters are salespeople. That's the reality. They have to sell the job. Then they have to sell the candidate. Then they have to sell the contract. You know, it's constant selling. So salespeople like to talk rubbish all the time. So I think if you allow people the time to talk rubbish, great ideas come out of that. That's how it's worked for us. It's not something that we have purposely built into our culture, but it's something that is in our culture, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And great that you just allow those natural discussions to actually happen and bring those initiatives into the business.
Another accident, you see. I told you, not just full of accidents.
Accidents. Well, on accidents, let's actually really go into this, that, you know, your journey as well, and go, you know, everything in life isn't as smooth sailing as what people actually see it to be. I'm sure behind the scenes of this incredible story of multiple startups and being able to take it to exits as well, and then now where you are with multiple business streams, what are some of those harder times that happened to you or lessons learned that you have really shaped you making the next steps?
How long have we got?
Oh, you can talk as long as you like.
I'll talk about some of the – I think the exits have not been great for me for different reasons. You know, the first business, I was really young. A listed company came and wanted to buy us and we sold. I wish I hadn't sold that business looking back on it. And unfortunately, the deal we negotiated had a great multiple, but it was all back-ended. And the GFC hit during that back end. So the payout was, you know, oh gosh, it was probably 10% of what was predicted at the beginning. So that's a bit disheartening. Luckily, I was young.
It is very disheartening.
It is disheartening at the time. It's devastating, right?
Good learnings, to know what to look out for.
Doesn't feel like good learnings at the time. But that was really, I found that really hard. It wasn't, you know, I was probably, what was I? I would have been maybe early 30s. I really thought my life had changed and I was going to be doing all these things and we were just about to have a baby. And I was like, anyway, that was all went completely wrong. So that was really, really difficult. And I ended up getting stuck there and I had to negotiate my way out of there. I was very unhappy working in a listed business in the earnout period. The earnout period was way too long. I trusted my lawyers way too much. There was just all those box standard mistakes. So that was really, really hard. Then going again, and once you get into it, it's fine. The next one was quite different in that the first one was with a business partner who was a lot older than me. And that's also quite difficult to manage sometimes when you're not used to that. You just have to work out how to do that. The next one was actually with a friend and a very, very close friend who I'd known a long time, who I'd also known back in the UK. And that business was wildly successful, but our relationship broke down enormously and ended up me selling my share back to that person. Again, not something – it's interesting. I've had two exits, neither of which, if I look back on, I would have done again. But that was much more financially rewarding, but I also lost the friendship. So that was extremely hard as well. And I think you kind of start to question yourself as an entrepreneur. I've had two exits, neither of these have been great. And I was quite down by that. So that's probably the hardest thing is in terms of the exits.
It is really hard when you mentioned partnerships, like having strength in long-term partnerships within business, it's not straightforward.
It's not. And you know why? Everyone, and I get this, everyone encourage you to have a business partner who's the opposite of you, right? They're your yin and your yang, all that rubbish. And I believe in that to a point and that's a great idea. But I think there also has to be an element of real similarity in there as well. You don't want to be complete opposites, which is what I have been with all my business partners. By the way, no business partners in Nudge, just as an FYI. Because what happens is when you're with someone that's completely the opposite of you, it really is great in the early years. But as you get more successful, your ideas as to which way the companies can go, the products could go, that they become wider and wider and wider, and that creates conflict. And I think if there's no similarity and no jointness in what's happening there, then you're going to reach a point of either the business failing, culture falling apart, our relationship breaking down like it happened with us. And, I lost a very good friend through that, which is it's part of life. But it's
significant.
It is significant. I guess it is. Look, it is. Someone said to me it's a bit like grief. I'm not sure if it's a bit like grief, but I guess when you've been friends with someone 20 years and then suddenly you don't see them anymore, there probably is an element of that. But it just knocks your confidence, is your ability to actually be an entrepreneur. And I think the other thing that's happened to me that's really questioned my ability as a leader is there's been a number of instances where people have defrauded me through the business, whether it be CEOs that we brought in, financial controllers. That's happened to me more than once. And you kind of go, is this me? Is this happening to me more than once? This is obviously something I'm doing. And I think what I realize there is everyone always says outsource the things you don't understand. For me, that's numbers. So I did. But what they don't say is outsource it, but make sure you still take accountability and keep your eye on it and ask questions. Whereas I just like, take it over there. I don't want to hear about it. I'm just going to do what I'm great at. And you do need to focus on what you're great at, absolutely. But you also need to remember you need to take accountability for the rest of your business as well. Or you can end up with the business being in financial trouble, or you get defrauded of money. And that is really, I get wounded when people leave my businesses, even though I'm always happy for them because there's usually a genuine reason. But when someone steals from you, it's like the most brutal thing in the world. It's like just being punched in the stomach. It's awful.
Oh, that is awful. And sorry, to go through that multiple times as well. And I think exactly what you said, that within business, you do need to be across the detail. You don't need to be the expert at it. You absolutely don't need to, be sitting there going through line by line, but to also have those key people that you've trusted to be able to report back to you and give you an overview on where the current position is as well.
Yeah, I think we always had the overview. I didn't delve into the overview enough. I was always like, I don't really care about that. We're making money, great, I can carry on with my new product. That's not enough. If you want to be a really effective leader, you do have to have more in-depth knowledge into it and take the time to do stuff that you don't want to do, but to a point of just understanding it completely, not actually doing it. And I think that's hard because everyone tells you, just do what you're really good at, focus on what you're good at, and there's just hire people to do the other stuff. It's a bit more than that. And no one really talks about how you have to take it that next step further. But you soon work it out.
And it's the leadership side too, to really understand everyone's world and to understand all components of the business, of being the leader.
Yeah, leadership's interesting. I was a terrible leader manager at the beginning. I was very young. You learn how to do that. You don't have to learn how to, I'll frame this in the way that I see it now. You don't have to learn how to be a good leader. You have to learn how to reflect on your own shortcomings and abilities and what you've done. That in itself, I believe, helps you become a good leader. Like, being a good leader is a very hard thing to learn. But what you have to do is go, well, what have I done wrong this quarter, this week? However often you want to do that, and self-reflect and actually make sure you put something in to make you accountable to change it. That's really the way I think most leaders become better leaders. Managing the leading is very different. I'm still a terrible manager because I just particularly enjoy it. But the leadership thing is, it's really just the willingness to continuously criticize yourself.
To consistently try to get in that uncomfortable zone as well for growth of, you know, whether it's holding conversations, whether it's the focusing on how you're actually delivering messages in your communication, whether it's a strategic approach or bringing people on a vision and being able to influence as well. But it definitely is just getting stronger every day and, yeah, you know, not being too hard on yourself as well. But I agree with you completely of being able to look back and go, okay, what could I have done differently, and actually ask those hard questions of yourself.
I think that's right. And I think you've coined it perfectly. It's not being hard on yourself. That's not going to help you at all. I've done that countless times. That's completely disruptive. That doesn't help whatsoever. It's just being willing to understand. That doesn't mean you have to be hard on yourself. You just need to understand it. There's a big, big difference.
There sure is. And then behind the scenes, Steve, like to go through those challenges, because they are very significant and they definitely would have left their, I suppose, small mark in your world and your journey.
This is why
as
I have
well.
My hair, you see.
Oh, right. Okay, that's the reason. But what do you do for yourself? Because, you know, it does. It takes a lot to have that positive mindset and to show up every day and be the best version of yourself and to keep pushing forward with the multiple businesses that you have. What are you doing behind the scenes?
Like, I do a lot for myself these days, more than I used to. And I think you learn that as you get older, unless someone helps you work that out earlier. But I mean, I do a lot of fitness. I do a lot of fun stuff. I love doing stupid things. So for example, I recently tried to do I actually did complete half Ironman. That was last year. That was one of the hardest things I've done, not in terms of the event, but just the discipline for the training. I've been trying to learn to wing foil, which is an insane sport for anyone who's ever tried that. Bouncing on a board on a foil whilst also flying a wing above your head.
What is a wing foil?
You have to look it up. It's really hard to articulate it. I've been trying to learn to surf. I try and do a lot of things that scare me. Parachute jumps and gliding and stuff like that. I find that it's a really... my brain works all the time. So it's like that. So there's a number of things you can do. Like, you can go out to dinner, have a couple of glasses of wine. Alcohol dulls your brain. I'm not conducing and encouraging people heavy drinking alcohol, but it does stop your brain thinking, which I think is why a lot of people do drink. So having a couple of glasses of wine can really calm your mind down if you're out with friends. But also putting yourself in a terrifying situation completely takes your mind off the work, and it gives you a little bit more belief. Every time you push yourself to do something that scares you, I think it helps you in your work. So I do a lot of those things. I sleep a lot more than I used to. And I used to spend a lot more time with my children. They are now teenagers and have very little interest in doing that with me, which is bizarre. So now I'm spending even more time with my wife because we've suddenly got our lives back, which
is weird. Isn't it interesting? I'm there too. So I've got two teenagers and we've gone from, the run round and you're everywhere to all of a sudden it's like you still need to do a lot. You need to make sure there's plenty of food in the house and you're the best Uber driver ever. But there's so much more time.
My daughter's about to drive. So then I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to start another company probably, but I don't know. It's like there's going to be so much time.
Oh, it really is a significant change just in the whole feeling in the household as you go through that transition.
Yeah, well, mine are 13 and 15, so they're relatively only just new teenagers. It's changed a lot in the last 2 years. All those phases of children change your life a lot. And I do think that's one of the benefits of being an entrepreneur. You know, I've been able to manage my time. It's been 19 years since I worked for someone now. And, you know, when they were young, I was able to come home early and work into the night. And, you know, when they were at school, I was able to pick them up at school and then work into the night. Now I can come home early and go out. There's all sorts of different things. So you can control your time and your day. And I think, to me, that's been my – someone asked me the other day, what's your definition of freedom? To me, that's my definition of freedom. It's not that I'm not working as hard. It's just I work hard when I want to and I can do the things that I want to as well. That you don't always have that when you're in a job. And I think that's one of the wonders of being an entrepreneur.
It really is. And I think that the way I would look at summarising that even is the ability to have choice.
Yes.
So it's absolutely, you're working really hard, you're doing multiple things, but at any given time you can choose whether you're able to step out for that 5 minutes.
Choice is freedom. That's it.
That's exactly right. And that's financially and with time, but they're the two key elements where you know that it's a winning formula for life is that, you know, that level of what does success mean is the ability to have that time with our loved ones and the people around us. And that comes by ensuring that you've got that financial setup and by what you do in life is a passion and just part of who you are as
yes.
a person.
I wish I'd been smarter with money. And lucky that we've done pretty well over the years, but yeah, if you're smarter with that earlier in your life, no one really is. I think there are some people, accountants are. But look, no one I know is. It really does give you that choice, which makes a lot of things easier. Like as I said to you earlier, the ability we were able to build Nudge in the way we were was because of the financial settlement I got out of the previous business. I wouldn't have been able to do that otherwise, which means Nudge would have been a very different business. So there's a great example of how being a little bit smarter with money can give you the ability to actually go and build something better the way you want to. And that's a choice as well.
And growing that over time as well, once you get the business going and going through that scale to be able to then continue to invest back in the business for its future growth.
Absolutely. And we're about to start another business soon, which is going to interact, which I can't tell you about.
Can't tell.
So excited. With a whole bunch of people that I've met recently. And I think that it's going to kind of intertwine into the other ones. But it's probably the most... I'm excited. I'm very excited about shiny things, always, like most entrepreneurs.
It's like someone's dangling the carrot yeah. out there going, follow the path.
Well, it's been a couple of years in the making, so it's been going a long time. It goes through peaks and troughs of amount of effort, but we're actually getting closer. I'm thinking, what are we now, March? Maybe August we'll actually be able to launch it.
Sounds very, very exciting. Is it going to be like this pre-launch of building this momentum and excitement?
That's a good question. There's a couple of key things. I've got a meeting actually straight after this that we need to sort of pin down. If we can pin them down, there will be a pre-launch, but it'll be quite a discreet pre-launch. There you go. That's all I'm giving you.
Okay, no more. We're not going to get any more. We're going to have to wait. So August. August it is.
It'll be on Give It a Nudge for sure. So yeah, don't worry.
Oh, excellent. No, well, just reflecting even on what you're saying there about the fear, I just want to go back to that for a second. And it is quite interesting how you were saying that doing things that actually do generate that bit of fear and how that makes you stop but actually thrive. In that moment, I was just thinking through as you were saying it earlier. I started ocean swimming. Oh, it was a couple of years ago. Haven't done too much this year, but did do a lot of it over COVID. It is absolutely terrifying. I'm scared of sharks. Like, no tomorrow, scared of sharks. My son surfs. I'm always like, you know, where are the sharks? And following all the different dorsal apps.
Oh, you can't
apps.
Use that app. Don't
oh
use that
gosh,
app.
It
They're
breaks
everywhere.
Me. It absolutely breaks me. And I've had multiple times where I've gone, you were in there and I can see this. So I've stopped doing that. But I have to say you do stop thinking. So I've had the busiest weeks, months, back to back, and your brain is exactly as you're saying, going a million miles an hour. But the second you dive into that water and you swim out a kilometre, oh my gosh.
Yeah, like I've done everything. It a couple of times. I'm like you. I find it, I live in Tamarama, which is right next to Bondi. So I do swim at Iceberg's Pool a lot, which is about as close as I like to get now. But I've got a lot of people wanting me to do that ocean swim across Bondi or across Maroubra. But I find it terrifying because when you can't see and it's just dark and then you see a move, it doesn't matter what it is, I'm terrified. I find it absolutely – so I have a lot of respect for you for doing that because I have done it. It's an amazing feeling afterwards, like most things.
Incredible feeling.
And getting in the ocean every day is something I do try and do as well. I have found that that has a very positive impact on you. But I'm happy to go and do it. Like, we recently were lucky enough to go to the Caribbean. I'm happy to go and do it there because the sharks are tiny, right? But here – or, you know, or anywhere around South Africa or Perth or Adelaide or pretty much anywhere. I mean, Sydney's pretty bad with the white pointers. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. But maybe that's something in there of like the startup swimming squad that meets down at Bondi at 6 o'clock in the morning or something to get out there and face the day full of energy with clarity.
Yeah, there's a lot of people down at Bondi at sunrise. Oh, my God. It is. Have you ever been down there at that time? It is packed.
Not at that time, no.
My son goes, he was surfing this morning. He goes pretty much 5:50 every morning. And sometimes I go down with him. And there's so many people down there. It's insane.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to the
it's
world.
It's the best start of the day.
I know, but we used to go out when I was younger. They don't go out at all now. They're all home by 9. This is why all the restaurants shut at 10. Because everyone's up at 5, by all accounts, which I didn't realise, doing all these things. But, I do think, you know, it doesn't have to be a sport thing either. You know, I started out doing public speaking, which still, by the way, and I've done lots of it now, fills me with dread. I feel physically sick.
I wouldn't have picked up on that.
Oh, I can't stand it. I actually have to be on my own for the half an hour before. I did a talk in Adelaide and I was staying next to the venue. So I got an Uber to drive me half an hour's walk away so I could walk half an hour to the venue. And then I like to walk straight on stage from that walk. But I hate it. I can't sleep the night before, the weeks before, I'm dreading it. Once I'm up there, I'm fine. Afterwards, I love it. But everything else is just awful. But I keep hoping that it's going to get better. It hasn't yet.
What do you do, though, before? Like, obviously, the walk is a big thing, but is there a certain, like, you know, breath work that you do?
No, I just rehearse it as I walk. So I just go through this. And I'll try and do it maybe. I'll try and do it the night before. I'll go for a walk the night before and I'll do 2-3 times and it'll be dreadful. And I'll go to sleep in utter dread because it's been dreadful. And then I'll try and do it twice before I get to the venue. And that's usually dreadful too. And who knows? I don't listen to it live. It might be dreadful, but I'm hoping it's not. But it's, I still find that I volunteer to do it all the time. And the moment I do it, I feel sick.
Yeah, but that ability to go, you know that it's not your comfort zone, but it is very much where you need to be, you know, to have that voice and to share that voice and to share your why and your vision and all the problems that you are solving. And the only way to do that is to get out there and to be able to share that message.
Have you done live TV?
Have I done live TV? Mm. No.
So we've done what? 105 Give It a Nudge shows, which obviously done in a TV studio. But only once have I been on live TV. It was awful. I was about 70 shows into Give It a Nudge and I was thinking, I got this. How hard can it be? I was so panicked. I sat there looking awkward. I couldn't think of what to say. It was dreadful. I don't know what happens, but it's just completely – I always thought everyone says, oh, live TV is so much. I was like, oh, why would it be? I've done so many of these shows. We just sit there. We don't really change anything. Cameras. I don't know what it is. It's there's something somewhere. It sets off a panic button, and it's really – you should try it. If you want to get terrified, go for a morning swim and then go straight onto live TV.
I'm going to add that one to the bucket list, that's for sure, and see how it goes. Oh, well, we have learned so much about you. But I do have one final question, and it really comes down to your journey. It has been filled with all these highs and lows and lots of lessons learned. But what would be, whether it's one or three things, your words of wisdom or advice that you would offer the founders or aspiring leaders of tomorrow?
I was talking about this with someone the other day. And I've heard this a lot. And I think with Nudge just about to hit 5 years, it's quite interesting because it just reminded me again. I think what you think you can achieve in a short period of time, you don't. But what you don't realize is how much you can achieve in a longer period of time. So, for example, those first 5 years in the business, the difference between year one and five is incredible. That first 6 months, you achieve so much and you're like, wow, we're just going to take over the world. And then it just sort of, you know, fizzes for a while. And it can be quite disheartening. And then as long as you keep going, you know, it's this constant, it's the chipping away. It's a bit like exercise, right? If you exercise sporadically, you don't get the benefits. If you're consistent but do less, you'll get much greater benefits. It's the same thing with your businesses. You suddenly hit these things just start to happen after sort of 3, 4, maybe 5 years. Suddenly things just happen and you suddenly go and make these huge leaps. And I think a lot of people give up when they don't get the results they want quickly enough. And that's often financially driven as well, which is unfortunate. But if you can find a way to keep going, even if you keep it going as a side hustle, things will change and things will happen. And I think that perseverance is probably the number one thing that I forget because I'm very impatient, like everyone else I know in this industry. But I always realize once it's happened. So I'm the worst at it, but that's definitely one word of wisdom. And the other one is, as we touched on earlier, and I think it's really important, and it's being making sure you do outsource all the things you're bad for, but don't ignore them because they will come back and bite you. It's just awful. And get into media. Like who knew I was going to love doing podcasts? Who knew I was going to go on stage? Although I hadn't done any of those things prior to Nudge. And as much as it still makes me sick to do the talking, I love giving smaller talks. I love doing the podcast. I love coming on this show, all that kind of stuff. I love writing. I'd never written before and I'm hugely dyslexic. So that's always fun because it takes me 10 times longer to go through Grammarly than it does to actually write the piece. But all that stuff, that creative stuff that I never had any idea about because essentially I was a salesperson for all those years, I really, really enjoy. And I found that they've helped me become better in my sales because they give me more confidence in what I'm talking about.
That is some great advice there to be able to offer everyone. On the financial side, this is a big part for startups and even businesses that have actually been trading for, you know, well over a decade as well. Do you have any tips that you could offer our audience for what can you do in that small business environment to really build that cash flow, and or where is it that you can go for just even help and advice and support during that time?
Look, I think there's so many, well, other founders are always, I think, in my view, the best help. So you can join clubs, you can join accelerators, those sorts of things. There's plenty of accounting firms designed for startups now. I think the biggest thing I've learned, which is the opposite of how I used to run my businesses, is not what you sell, it's how much you spend. It's always how much you spend. You can sell as much as you want. And my first business, we had unbelievable sales results, but we also spent because I was young. You should have seen my office. It was wild. So many fun things to do in there, right? And it's very much about controlling your spend. And then I think the other thing you need to do, and not so much in my early companies, but very much now, there is technology there that can automate things that can enable you to achieve three times what you're achieving now without hiring anybody else. And not only is that good for your cash flow, it's great for your staff and your employees as well, because then they get to in sort of grow in what they're doing while still achieving the same amount. So I think look at the technology and watch what you spend. Those are the key things I would take away.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. Really, you've shared some incredible insights today and you've had a remarkable odyssey you should be so exceptionally proud of. So thank you very much for joining me on Leadership Odysseys. And we're waiting for August to hear what this incredible next step is going to be. But yeah, it's been wonderful having a conversation with you today.
It's been awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us on this incredible odyssey. Until next time, lead with courage, lead with heart, and keep exploring the remarkable world of leadership. Enjoyed the journey? Hit the subscribe button, rate us, and leave a review if our stories ignited your leadership spirit. Your feedback fuels our odyssey.